At Salesforce, we're all about asking more of AI. Questions like, where is the data going? Is it private? Is it secure? Are you sure? Are you sure you're sure? Is anyone really sure? For sure? Get answers you can trust from Salesforce at askmoreofai.com.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Monday, October 9th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. When OpenAI unleashed its human-like chatbot, ChatGPT, last year, one thing seemed clear to many of us. Artificial intelligence is coming for our jobs. And not just jobs, whole industries. But what if this isn't an end to how we work, but a pivot? An opportunity to do things differently, from what positions companies need to hire for to how those businesses get started in the first place. On this all work-focused episode, we'll play around with the idea of how generative AI could change our jobs, for better or worse. To the long list of things that artificial intelligence promises to change, you can add starting a business. I mean, if ChatGPT or Bard can write you an essay, a poem, or your wedding vows, why not a business plan? But these systems are known for sometimes just making up answers. They're called hallucinations. So can eager founders really trust them? Bart Ziegler wrote about some of the ways entrepreneurs are already using generative AI, and he joins me now. So, Bart, the first thing entrepreneurs need to do when starting a business is come up with an idea. But to be really helpful, I assume you have to put more into an AI than just give me a new idea for a business.
Well, for example, you could ask an AI system to identify problems consumers face using certain products or services and have it suggest solutions. You could then kind of limit the realm of what it's discussing by saying, I want this to be something that's affordable to people who make under $80,000 a year, and something that targets a certain age group, ethnic group, demographic group, and then kind of tailor it down. And chances are it'll come up with some interesting ideas for you to consider for a company.
Okay, so now you've got an idea. For entrepreneurs who are using AI to get started, what might they do next?
The next, you want to make sure your idea is unique and viable. So you would ask the AI system, tell me what other companies have tried similar systems and did they fail or succeed? And then you could say, tell it to see what is the popular thing in certain regions of the country or regions of the world or not. So you just kind of narrow it down to its viability. You could also ask it, what do you think it would cost to start up a company of this type in funding?
Let's talk a little bit about funding. Can generative AI help with getting investment?
It could help with the narrowing down of what possible funders you want to target. It could say that this type of company you're proposing has been funded by venture capital firms A, B, and C, but has been rejected by D, E, and F. Or it could say this is the type of business that only a narrow group of investors has ever funded.
Are these the kind of things that you can just put out to investors or put out to potential customers? Is there more that an entrepreneur needs to do with the information that AI is generating for it?
The AI systems can put out things that are kind of pie in the sky or not quite grounded to reality. You know, after all, they don't have human intelligence, so they're basically just spewing out things that they find that seem to fit a pattern or that seem to answer your question based on prior questions like that. So you still have to do some research and some sort of real-world testing of your ideas.
Are there other drawbacks to using these systems?
There definitely are. I mean, for one thing, AI systems largely are based on older information. They were trained sometimes as much as a year or two ago because of the vast amount of data they have to ingest and categorize. So you're not getting current data in many of them. The other thing is that AI systems are notorious for what they call hallucinations, which are coming back with answers to your questions that sound logical and practical, but it turns out they are muddling things or in some cases even just making up information. One of these entrepreneurs I talked to, actually as a business professor, he said, don't trust the numbers they give you. So basically you have to be careful.
Okay, so don't trust it fully. I mean, what did the experts that you spoke to say about how much of an impact AI is already having on startups and maybe potentially could have?
Well, it's definitely being taught in business schools now. So there's going to be a whole new generation of entrepreneurs who know this is a tool to go to. One professor at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania used it in his class, and he had the students come up with some ideas and then ran them through an AI system while an actual venture capitalist was sitting there with them. And the ideas and critiques that the AI systems had about the weaknesses and strengths of the business proposals, the real venture capitalist said, yeah, I basically agree with all of that.
That was Bart Ziegler, who wrote about this for the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for joining us, Bart.
You're welcome.
All right, so maybe AI can help you start a business, but can it help you start a new profession? Just like the advent of the automobile was bad news for stable hands, but good for mechanics, so might AI be for these new roles. We'll tell you about them when we come back.
At Salesforce, we're all about asking more of AI. Questions like, where is the data going? Is it private? Is it secure? Is it ready to use now? How about now? And if not now, when? And how? Get answers you can trust from Salesforce at askmoreofai.com.
While some jobs may be swept away by generative AI tools, new ones could show up in their place. Here to talk about some of the new careers that AI could and already is creating is WSJ Pro Enterprise Technology Bureau Chief Stephen Rosenbusch. So Stephen, you and your colleagues wrote about some of these new jobs, and I just want to start with one that seems essential to getting AI models up and running at companies. What does an in-house large language model developer do?
These large language models, which are trained on massive amounts of data scraped from the internet to recognize, generate, and predict language and sequences, actually need to be tailored and custom fit to purpose. So in finance, for example, we're likely to see developers who take these large language models and customize them for certain financial applications. You could see that same dynamic taking shape across all sorts of industries.
All right, so once this tech is integrated into companies, a lot of people are going to need to be, you know, reshuffled. And you say there's going to be a job called a reskiller?
Exactly. You know, we're evolving, we hope, but at not the same sort of speed that machines are. We proceed at the pace of evolution, much, much slower. So we're going to have to work really, really hard in some ways to keep up with machines and keep our skills relevant, figure out what it is that we can do really well relative to wherever the machines are at the moment, and then figure out, you know, what skills are really useful in certain settings, whether they're companies or other environments. And those people are going to be the reskillers.
Have we seen this job already existing because of the technology that we have today?
Of course. But what's new here is that there's this new dynamic between machines and specifically AI and what people need to know. So these people are going to have very specific understanding of where AI is in terms of its development, of where people ought to be in terms of their development, and how to apply them to really specific situations.
Okay, this next job is something that we've actually talked about on the show before, and it seems like maybe something that's created really just because of the advent of AI. Tell us about prompt engineers.
Well, this is a job that everyone's talking about right now, and no one had anything to say about this role until ChatGPT made its debut last November. But now you need someone who actually understands how to talk to the machines. While the machines understand, in a sense, natural language, you sort of have to know what to say to them, and that's not so obvious. And right now we're all used to dealing with search, but what you're getting there is a very static, straightforward answer to a straightforward question. Where is the restaurant? Where am I going? This is a new skill in which you end up with one set of responses and then refine it. And over time, the AI gets smarter, gives you better answers, and hopefully we get more value out of it as well.
The last job I want to ask you about may seem like, you know, the most out there, but it really has a useful goal. AI psychotherapist. Why do we need those?
Well, who doesn't really need a psychotherapist?
Sure.
The problem with AI as it exists now is that unlike the software programs that we've developed over the last number of decades, they don't have an audit trail for us. They don't really explain themselves. It's not obvious how or why a large language model with 1 trillion parameters spits out the answer that it does. There are just too many variables. So we're going to need people who are trained in sort of understanding the patterns and going back and reverse engineering the decisions that AI has made. If I go to an AI and I ask it for a recipe to make from the things in my basket, it's not a life and death matter, at least most of the time. But, you know, if you're talking about hiring someone, if you're talking about issuing a mortgage, if you're talking about something that could involve some important life event, you really want to know why the AI is making a recommendation that affects someone's life. Just as we need to have an explanation when people make these decisions, we're still going to have an explanation when the machines make decisions.
All right, that's Stephen Rosenbusch, Bureau Chief for the WSJ's Enterprise Technology Team. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And finally, these new roles might mean you'll be spending all day at work dealing with AI, but our tech columnist Christopher Mims recently wrote that pretty soon you won't be able to escape AI even outside of work. He says it'll worm its way into our work and home lives, just like the internet and email.
Some of the experts I talked to think of AI as something as basic as a new computing platform, like your phone or the cloud. It's just this place where we can tell machines to do things using natural language, and those machines can interact with other services that use natural language as their main interface, like search engines. And because the whole internet is built around natural language, these AIs have the potential to save us all kinds of time, just make us more efficient. So we're going to see them pop up in the way that people make plans, the way that they date, the way that they communicate with their friends and relatives. AI will become invisible because AI will just be another kind of computing, like your mobile phone.
And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by me and Anthony Bansi with Deputy Editor Chris Sinsley. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening.